Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, I'm Steph.
And I'm Simon.
And welcome to The Food Fight, where we offer a different perspective on food culture issues around Australia and the world.
We'll talk with chefs, producers, business owners and experts to hear their stories and find out what makes them tick.
Today we chat with Julian Sincotta from Butter in Sydney about how a concept built on fried chicken, sneakers, champagne and hip-hop successfully blurred the lines between food and culture. All right, welcome to another episode of the Food Fight podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name's Steph Postuma. I'm your host, joined by my co-host, Simon Evans.
Hey.
Now, we start our podcast with an acknowledgement of country, so we'd like to acknowledge the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, the traditional custodians of the land where we gather today, and pay respect to elders past, present, and emerging. All right, let's introduce our guest. We are here at Thievery in Glebe with Julian Sincotta. Thanks so much for joining us, man.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Well, you are part owner here and then also over at Butter in Surry Hills and now in Chatswood.
And Parramatta.
And Parramatta.
Surry Hills, Parramatta,
and
now Chatswood.
And now Chatswood, yes. All right, three, going strong. Let's... To begin with, like the easy way to start is just for you to give us a bit of a background of sort of how you got into food, like where you first started learning about food and things like that and where you started working. We know you got began at Rockpool in a way as well.
Yeah, I guess I got pulled out of school because I was wagging and my dad had a cafe and I actually wanted to be a builder or a chef, something with my
hands.
Should
have been a builder.
Should have, yeah. Probably paid more and, you know, doing half days. So within the week, pulled me out, put me in the kitchen at the cafe and was just washing dishes. Wouldn't let me do anything else apart from make salads and wash dishes. Wasn't even allowed to empty the deep fryer. Like,
really?
It was just very, yeah, he was like, I wasn't trained enough. And then I started doing a few shifts a week at a little place in Parramatta called Courtney's Brasserie, Paul Cooper's. And I just remember like the first dish was like this mushroom, wild mushroom terrine. And he had like this mandarin gel that was like a line on it, this quinelle of beetroot chutney and this little like baguette crostinis, and I was like, wow. And that was cool.
Yeah.
And then I was already like an apprentice then. I think I was like second year or third, and he was like, I can't afford you. And then I got the job. I saw an ad in the paper for Rockpool. My best friend from school had started working there after he did the Intercontinental Hotel School. He's like, come and work here. And I had nothing. I had no idea who Neil Perry was or what it was or anything. And I went on the trial, and supposedly everyone told me I only got the job because I went for the Roosters, and Khan Dennis, the head chef at the time, went for the Roosters. It was 04 and it was when they were playing the Bulldogs. And
good, yeah, reason as so, any to get a job. When,
yeah. I mean, apprentices are quite similar sometimes. Yeah. Like, I just pick someone I might want to chat to.
Yeah. And then I started there, and that trial, it was like, you know, all this like fine stuff, and I was just like, wow, okay, this is amazing. I wanted to quit from day one for a good year and a half, but my brother sort of kept me in there and stuck it out, and yeah, like I just fell in love with it. It was a little plate in the, you know, the camaraderie of the kitchen, everyone working together, you know, just pushing on, that adrenaline, that just like was amazing. I loved it. Always been competitive, like everyone in the kitchen was like, who can do it quicker, who can do it better, who can do more, you know. So yeah, I just really loved that whole thing of the kitchen, and that was where I probably, you know, from Courtney's Brasserie, like I did really love it and wanted to get into it, but that was really probably the point of like, okay, this is what I'm doing and what I'm gonna do and what I envision to have my own places or do my own things. So yeah, I spent, like 5 years, went down to Melbourne when they opened up Rockpool Bar and Grill, was still like a, you know, a sort of senior chef, not like a sous chef, but like a senior CDP. And then, you know, slowly sort of worked up the ranks there, came back and opened up Bar and Grill in Sydney, 2009. And then, yeah, had gone overseas and, yeah, done a few things in between.
Awesome. So we won't dwell on Rockpool too much, but maybe what's like, is there something that you learnt? Like, we've talked to a few Rockpool alumni on this podcast. Is there something that you sort of learnt there that you've just taken with you ever since?
I think, like, you know, Neil's appreciation for food, for people, for hospitality, it was a very big thing. You know, no matter how much you worked, how tired, anything, like, he'd just walk through the kitchen and lift everyone up. Everyone was like family. Everyone worked together. Like, honestly, it's still one of the places, you know, and we try to instill that with ours. Like, everyone is family. Everyone works for the same goal. You know, met so many amazing people there and friends still, like, you know, Graham and stuff and Pollard, everyone. Like, it, you still really stay connected and you, like, I don't know, I look back on it going, how the hell did I prep all that stuff and get it all done? And, like, you know, and it's like, I couldn't do it now.
It was every chef feeling. Yeah, it was every job I've had. Yeah. I felt like, how do we get through that?
Yeah.
How do we do that with, like, that many people?
I know, like, mate, doing, like, 20 kilos of crabs and having to pick liters and liters of herbs and salad mix and all this. I was just like in a dungeon down at Rockpool. Like, honestly, I don't know how, but I just think instilling in, you know, what food is, what hospitality is, that's just his whole thing, you know, just cooking beautiful, amazing food.
And so then at a point while you were working at Rockpool, when you won the Josephine Pignolet Young Chef Award?
No, I was at, I just opened up Nomad.
Oh, okay.
Nathan Sarcy was the head there and it was a few years in the making.
Yeah.
And I had actually wanted to apply for it years before, but never got around to it. And I think it was like 4 years after. Yeah, I must have been 24 when I wanted to do it. And I still had my notes that I wrote. And it was still actually pretty the same of like how I wanted to do, or, you know, your philosophy on food. And then, yeah, so I won that 2015.
Yeah. So, like, for people who haven't heard of it, because they're diverse group of people that listen to this, like, what does winning that award mean and what did it bring you?
So it's on basically you as a chef, as a leader, you know, within the industry. Basically they want to, the, you know, Josephine Pignolet, obviously she was an up-and-coming chef, Damien Pignolet's wife, they had a car accident. They, you know, did this award in honor to her, and it was for aspiring up-and-coming chefs to give them, obviously, you know, chefs and people don't get paid much, to get money to go overseas, to learn, to come back and be that next leader of chef that, on, you know, gives them their training and knowledge to the next generation.
Cool. And so that then facilitated you getting some pretty cool stages overseas.
Yeah, so, I mean, before that, I'd actually been overseas. I was in Melbourne and I was like, Khan, I want to... Well, Neil was actually going to open up in London. I was like, I wanted to go over and learn, but then, you know, Melbourne happened. So I was like, okay, cool, getting out of home. I went over to America in like 2009, sort of on my own back. Didn't really have much, but it was like dollar for dollar. So it was actually amazing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the exchange rate. And yeah, I went and like staged at Alinea and went to Charlie Trotter's. I went to Morimoto in New York, which was really fun. I'd always loved Japanese sort of style of things. And then, yeah, so obviously I'd always wanted to go to Europe. And that was a time when I was meant to apply for the award and I wanted to go and get it done. But yeah, well, after I got the award, you get like some flights and some money to go over to learn. And yeah, I went on a hiatus for 8 months and I did some stage in. I literally ate 3-4 times a day. I spent way more than my award money. I could have probably bought a house, but it was an experience that, you know, you're never going to get.
So what, because I don't know, we haven't talked too much about actual like staging. We've done a little bit on this podcast, but tell us about a place like Alinea, like walking into that place compared to where you'd been before, like what did you see and like what was it like? How did you respond and stuff like that? That's a next level place.
Sorry. Yeah, look, it was amazing. At that time, like before Neil at Rockpool, like we had gone into the molecular route and like these little veg jellies hot vanilla foams and everything was sous vide. And it, like it was an eye-opening. Yeah. It was different, thinking different. When I got there, like, God, like, that kitchen was absolutely amazing. Like, how they ran, two sides, cooking on each side, sous chefs and chefs in the middle that go from section to section, 24 courses. It was like, you know, all right, you got rutabaga on pass, or, you know, they're just going through the motions. It was like an army, and it was run so well. I guess what, and this is probably a thing from Rockpool or Neil, I didn't really see food.
Yeah.
Right. It was molecular. It was. I had an outstanding meal, but I had like I'd already known how to cook. You know, I was a stage. I was picking herbs. I didn't mind because you can do that and you watch and learn and you see things. I guess a part that I really kind of sort of found. One of the interns was like, "Oh, we're like having a drink." They all go like get smashed after work. Nice. You're there from bloody 9 a.m. till 1
like
in the morning.
Australia.
Yeah. It's JMO shots and beers. That's all you can have. And he's like, "Oh." Obviously, Australia, Asian food, distillate, like Thai flavors, things like that. Like, we're so accustomed to it. Balance and harmony, you know. And he's like, whinging to me. He's like, oh, I make this to the recipe, to the tea, to the salt, all this. And it's always different. It was a Thai distillation of flavors, like ginger, galangal, garlic, scud chili. And I'm like, yeah, but like ginger can taste different one day to the next. Chilies are more heat, this. And he's like, yeah, but I follow the recipe. And that was probably the point where I was just like, this is not cooking. Like you got to feel it. Like a recipe is a guideline, taste, seasoning, adapting to like what there is to. And yeah, and like I actually thought I'd go see Amazing Produce, all these things. It was a bit different, but like for what they did was fucking incredible. It was amazing. Like honestly, I had one of the most amazing theatrical. The food was tasty. A couple of the Asian things, probably not, but but it was an amazing meal. And yeah, I just kind of like, I really loved it. And then that was when it probably was a point where it was like, you know what? I just want to cook good, tasty, accessible food.
It's kind of like, there was almost like a different time in restaurants, like that kind of, it was still kind of that Ferranadria, Heston, molecular, things need to look not like their original form. Things need to like, taste like you have to have like 20 weird ingredients to make this like completely different flavor profile of stuff. And then we've kind of gone to that more like Noma, Scandinavian kind of ingredient focused, and we're in a much better place for now, because it was like dishes would just not look like food. But that was the challenge, was like, how can I make this thing look like a fucking rock or a pebble?
I think tomato, but it's a strawberry. Which is like, it's amazing. Honestly,
it's technically competent, but it does lose its soul.
Yeah.
And especially in kind of a massive brigade like that, when you are only seeing like one tiny part of the dish, that's just got to be like, very much feeling like you're not cooking or it's not food.
Yeah.
Do you think there's something, I don't know, like the fact that we didn't catch that molecular bug here in Australia in the same way that Europe might have, or in the States might have. I mean, some, I probably Sapia you look to and like restaurants like that, but I don't know, does that say something about Australian culture and Australian cuisine? Because what I see from, you know, wherever I consume food media is people really appreciating, and it's now, but it has always been, just really appreciating good, tasty, simplicity, produce driven stuff. And like so many people we talk to now are like, no, we don't want to fucking spherify anything. Like, we just like, why would we spherify a pea? It's already a sphere.
Yeah, I think a bit of like, I mean, okay, look back in the day, like Tets, Key, Aria, Rockpool and stuff. They had their time. There wasn't the casual restaurants there is now, right? It was either like your general local places or you went to those finer. One part is our population and demand. The other part is like, there's a lot more money over there than sort of here. I mean, even they had it to set these places up. Like, I mean, I know we had 20 chefs at Rockpool and things, but I think it was a bit as well, like they're hemorrhaging money, you know, but they're getting those awards. And we obviously never had the Michelin staff. I mean, Rockpool or, you know, Key or Venturi has been in the top 100s and that. But I just think that we appreciate and accept differently. You know, I mean, you want to actually go overseas and have those fine, crazy meals. Yeah. But here, you want something that you like. Mm. You know, Key, you've got a beautiful setting and you're having beautiful food. I mean, they're doing a little bit of it, but it's still more real food.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it comes down to lifestyle here a bit. Everyone's a bit less intense in Australia. So, like, and that kind of, like, 20 course or, like, so technical. It's really intense to work with and intense to eat. Mm. And also, like, wages in America are fucking nothing. You can afford to have 50 chefs to 20 diners.
And it's like, all the Mexicans doing everything.
Underpaid. So, like, I mean, that's probably the biggest difference. Same in the UK as well. Like, you have these massive brigades in these hotels that are serving, like, 30 guests. And you just couldn't afford that here.
It was probably one thing that I really, like, obviously, I would had just qualified and being there. And then, like, these interns, these people went to culinary school and, like, literally didn't really have any skill. But, like, thought they were, like, amazing too. Yeah. I think that Australia, and I think it's more in the UK too, like, just, mate, we can cook, we can do everything. Like, he's like, no, those guys will pick herbs, all these things. It's like, man, we had to do it ourselves. Like, they just didn't have that, like, you know. Look, there is a lot of amazing American chefs, but just my time of seeing, like, some of the young kids, I was like, God, you know, 18, 19, it's like, but, and they all do, like, their school. They're a little bit older, like 22 when they're kind of starting, when we were like 15, 16 starting apprenticeships. It was a totally different mindset, you know. They didn't think they had to do all the stuff, or you know, the shitty things,
they've been to the culinary schools, so they've skipped all the
and that's where you learn how to be quick and time management and doing that stuff. And you can do any job if you have to, you know, wash the shit out of anything, like, you're gonna do it. But what about
some of the European stages? You were at Saturn in Paris and Lyle's in London and couple of others. Like, is there one particular one that stood out, or something you learnt, or a story to share?
Like, which ones were actually good? Because so many stages can just be you're in the corner picking.
No, honestly, I did. I had a really fun time in Braw. Because I sort of had some friends in the places. I had a really good time. Like, Lyle's was awesome, and I think that was very, like, really good food too. Yeah, like, I really loved, you know, the food there. And there were also small kitchens and stuff too, and for what they were pumping out. God, it seems like forever ago now. But honestly, I can't say there was a favorite. I really enjoyed all of them. When you're learning something, when you're around people, you're seeing different things. Like, you're just so happy and engrossed in it, you know. Mm. Like, I didn't have anything bad. No, I didn't have a bad, you know, stage anywhere. So, Paris was awesome. I did really love that. And like I said, London. I tried to get in Kiki da Costa down in Danae in Barcelona, but they wouldn't have me, so I was a bit upset, because like, he was one of the first people I sort of had really watched, and that molecular part as well, like, very interesting and down, like, on the water, and, you know, but yeah,
cool. And then, so, like, returning to Australia, did you think, all right, well, like, I've got all this experience in these types of kitchens and things like that, this is a path I should naturally go down? Or was, you know, your next move reaction against that, like, what was it like when you got back here and then, you know, coming to Thievery?
So before I actually went, I opened up Thievery.
Right.
It was just before I came and consulted for the boys for a few months. So we sort of got it opened. I mean, it was my first proper place. I did my first sort of real menu myself. Yeah. Like, it was a thing, I think, like, Rockpool, it was always sort of Khan, Neil, there was bits that you didn't, and man, it's scary. Like, I think I'm a shit cunt, you know, like, anytime. You know, even now, it's like, you have, sort of coming back, so I'd already done Thievery, so I was on a little bit of a high, like, we were very just street food, wasn't anything going for hats, things like that. But yeah, learning all the experience, I think I just realized, like, more what I realized when I was in the States, just putting tasty, honest food and giving it the love that it needs.
Yeah.
In anything we do. So, you know, I mean, we talk about butter, it's just fried chicken, but for me, it's not just fried chicken. You know, it's harder to do one thing properly than putting seven elements on a plate that can morph and taste together.
Yeah.
So, you know,
there's nowhere to hide when it's one thing.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, that was Neil's thing of Bar and Grill, three elements on a plate. Like, they have to be really good.
Simon said something interesting when we were on the way up here, which was about, like,
that's good.
Yeah, I know, for once.
No, it's just office quotes.
Yeah, exactly. Less of them and more actually interesting chat, which was a nice change. In Australia, we seem to, like, And it goes sort of back to what you're saying, a bit of a rejection of like molecular stuff and liking that honest food. But like people can be very successful chefs and well-known chefs, but not have to be in the top restaurants in Australia. You know what I mean? Like you can do butter and be very successful and people know who you are because you are doing it and sort of unashamedly just saying we're doing this and we're doing it really, really well.
There's generally been like pressure in some of yourself winning the awards and that they're set up for you to come back and head up a Rockpool kitchen or open this 2-3 hat restaurant on the water. And there has been a lot more pressure and that was almost the only path you could take. And now it seems that people are taking a bit of a step back and being like, nah, I just want to do like good food on my own terms in the spot I want to hang out in.
Yeah, I think that happened a lot with like the guys and all the Rockpool and Key Boys and all that, everyone used to meet. And like, I mean, it was a very big term that was used, like just cooking the food I'd love to eat, right? That casual share dining. I think with like, say for butter or with anyone now is like conceptually, it's something different. Why? And Manoli, my business partner, coming from Deloitte and doing risk analysis, seeing all these big companies, and I think it's quite engrossed. My other partner, Mo, like when we were sitting down, was like, why do things the same?
Yeah.
Why cut, copy and paste? Think outside and conceptually for what like butter is, it was very weird. It's odd. It's something. It's like, okay, we're going to do these four pillars, fried chicken, hip hop, champagne, sneaker. It's a juxtaposition. Yeah, we're gimmicky. We didn't know if it's going to work. But to go through that, like why do something and just have your restaurant that's your little thing? You got a whole story. You get to connect more with people. I think people connect, love a more connection through a restaurant that can tell a story. It doesn't have to just be where the food's from, what the food is, but it could be a whole brand vision that's different.
Mm. So let's go back to the beginnings of butter then, because I reckon it's fascinating. So like, was it one person's idea or like how did it, what was the first conversation about, all right, this is the concept I'm thinking, like.
So I was overseas and at Thievery, we'd already done this LFC, Lebanese fried chicken. And throughout that, 8-9 months that I was away, everyone was like, oh, the fried chicken, like it was all like fried chicken shops, and then Thievery in Glebe has like the best fried chicken.
Yeah.
And which was amazing. And then the boys were like, we want to open a fried chicken joint. And then Manoli had always wanted to do a sneaker and hip hop bar. So they were like, all right, fried chicken, sneakers, hip hop. I came back and they're like, we want to do this. And I'm like, that's stupid. Like, honestly, that was my first thing going, you're joking. But I mean, look, they, were very, this is going to be. And look, honestly, we all were like, it's gimmicky. It's funny. Like, what the fuck are we doing? It was like, all right, well, what's next? Champagne. Our pillars, fried chicken, hip hop, champagne, music, fried chicken, hip hop, champagne and sneakers. It's food, music, booze, retail, like fashion. And yeah, we kind of just put it together, put it out there, and yeah, it's gone really well. And I think that we've been really true to what we are. Like, we're not just that restaurant. We're not just that retail shop. We're not just a bar. Like, we have really tried to ingrain and envision and stay true to the culture, the subculture of what hip hop and all that is.
Yeah, I mean, that concept could easily have become gimmicky if the things weren't good, things weren't quality. Like, if it was shitty chicken, like it wouldn't have worked, and people, it would have been just a throw in to it'd be like someone opening a shoe shop and then just making some chicken, or you get like those random like places that like decide to put a coffee machine, like we'll just do coffee, and it never fucking works.
Yeah,
because coffee's a gimmick.
Definitely a few of them.
Yeah,
it definitely could have. I mean, and that's the thing, like the training and everything, no matter what you sort of do, like we have good, honest, tasty food.
Like cooking.
We try to. I've changed it like a little bit. Customers probably don't really know, or I do a different flour or adjust things just to be better. That you've always got to change and evolve and better yourself. We're 5 years now at Surrey, and we're going through another sort of little change. It's not big things, but it's just making sure our product is right and getting to the customers and done well. Our fashion side, having that done properly, like we're not big. We do our own clothing. We do a few small brands from, Europe or LA or America and stuff. The drink side of it, all of it is like simplistic elegance is what I like to kind of call it. It's streets meets luxury. It's nothing crazy. We're not doing over the top. We're not doing anything reinventing. We're just doing it good and honest. With our artists and the music, like we've really gotten into the culture and gotten into the people and with the labels and like the artists coming in, like Wu-Tang, we hustle for them to come in.
Yeah.
And obviously, Manoli's a massive fanboy. The guy was like, had to change his shirt 45 times before they come in because he was sweating so much.
That's so cool.
And they came in and they were just like, wow. They meant to go to Maryvale or something before. And we got them to come in. And
you stole them from Raekwon,
RZA and GZA had come and they were just like, what the fuck is this place, you know? And and I remember Raekwon was like, man, you know what? My mom's tastes like my mom's. It's like, secret ingredient, mustard powder, you know, like in fried chicken. And they told people. And then people started to ask to come to us. You know, we hustled a couple to come in. Yeah. And then just we're just kind of known for that.
Was that part of the business plan? Was it like, we want to incorporate like real hip hop into this store, like get people to come in, like some of the stuff you're doing now is.
I think it definitely was. We were starting off of, you know, fried chicken, hip hop, champagne, sneakers, like the food and food and booze, primarily in-store experiences was, you know, our number one focus. We wanted to get artists in. We didn't really know what capacity or how it worked. And as it did, we sort of grew. Like, we've interviewed artists. You know, we've had our Butter Presents and done with them. We've had internationals come over. We've had them tell people. We've had some artists meet other artists in there and you know, gone on to sort of get signed and things. It's been a surreal kind of weird, this little 40-seater fried chicken shop that could have been a gimmick, actually, stay true. There's a lot of stuff outside that people don't understand what we do. You know, people still like, oh, fuck, whatever. You know, they still think we're gimmicky. They don't understand. But for our, you know, biggest believers and supporters, they really understand and know what we're doing.
Mm. So how much of the I mean, when you come at the concept, so you got like, right, what are we actually going to do? But then was the kind of foresight there to be like, we want to be a culture, we want to be more than just a restaurant? Was that there originally, or was that just come with the planning? And or was that
was definitely the vision, a culture. Like I said, Manoli loves hip hop and loved everything and part of it. You know, they talk about drinking champagne or Hennessy. They all collect sneakers. They all eat fried chicken. Like Post Malone literally was eating fried chicken every day that we were taking to him. I was like, this is not good. It was definitely a culture because it's all about like the storytelling. It's what we had all loved growing up. All the boys, everyone collected sneakers. Everyone loves hip hop. It was envisioned. It was their culture, our culture. And we just sort of put it out there.
Yeah. Like, what was the initial response like when you first opened? Like, did people, like, how long did it take for people to get it?
Mate, the first few days, months opening, having lineups, I was honestly just
So there was lineups at the very start.
At the start. We had them out on the street for the good first 3 months until the council told us we weren't allowed to line people up. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, right.
It was really funny. And I was just like, why the fuck are people covered here? You know, like it was just very surreal. We had, you know, a lot of people in. Look, a lot of people still don't get it. Mm. A lot of people aren't engrossed. They just love the food. Other people like just love the retail. Other people just love like the drinks, you know. And then you have your greatest advocates that love all parts of it. We are very select. It's a very select, you know, culture. People being engrossed in the whole lot. We're not expecting to get everyone to fully get it.
Mm.
But I think we've stayed true. And I think it's why, you know, what do you say? 1 year is kind of make or break. Your next is three years. And then kind of 5 years to 10 years to sort of, you know, lasting for longevity. So that's why getting better and doing more and being more a part of the culture is a really big thing. We started off, I think we stayed true. It took us a couple of years to really sort of find that and really get within these artists and within the subculture, within the Australian community. And I think we've done it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. You definitely have. Because, I mean, the proof's in the pudding because you're busy and everyone knows Butter. But, like, it's just fascinating what you were talking about before about, you know, like being unique from the start and working with people from not a hospitality background and saying everyone wants to open a fucking restaurant. And, like, I mean, there are very few restaurants and there are even fewer casual, like, or takeaway fast food places in Australia that have, like, a serious cult following and people, like you say, like, that completely get it and are advocates and, like, love what you're about. So the only way to execute that is to do something unique. Like, it's almost impossible to just, like, unless you want to be the first person to invent a cronut or some shit.
Yeah.
like, you know, it's almost impossible to sort of break out of just being a hospitality venue and break into, like, other parts of culture, like, yeah, here in Australia. So, yeah, it worked.
Honestly, it's having the same, like, all those the visions and doing it right and doing it from the start. Like, you can do anything you put your mind to.
Yeah.
Some things will work, some things won't. I mean, look, we weren't the first to say put fashion and, you know, we were talking before, coffee machines at places, yeah, or, you know, they have their own clothing or merch. What I really think more of is that we're not just a restaurant or a bar. We actually are a brand.
Mm. Yes.
And we do, our brand is, that culture is part of our brand.
Yeah.
So that's a bigger thing of a restaurant. Yep, you can have a name, a chef doing what you're doing. Like, butter for us is a brand. And that's what we envisioned at the start.
Mm. Yeah.
I guess, I mean, that's kind of hip hop all over it. It's not just, it never has just been music. It has been about a culture, you know, about people, about background, about history, about stories. And it's to the point where hip hop has flooded popular culture, and almost in there's a kind of bit of a hip-hopification of food of recent as well, with like food just being mentioned in songs more, and like some like rappers haven't worked in kitchens because who hasn't worked in hospitality when you're grinding or something, like, and it's kind of this weird crossover anyway that's sort of been happening. So it's kind of, I mean, I guess the butter is almost a kind of personification of that cultural shift.
Well, like, we had ASAP Ferg talk about butter, a song here, and his latest song is like, we hit butter and, you know, drinking all the Henny and all my Aussie freaks, like the song Aussie Freaks. Wow. And we were just like,
that's pretty amazing. Yeah. That is like, pretty amazing.
You know, there was like an ad on, TV, the Snoop Dogg one with Menu Lock.
That's right.
And people, and then everyone like Lab Bible, like, oh, you know, Snoop Dogg raps about Australia and all this. It's like, mate, that motherfucker got paid to do this.
Exactly.
Really, like, you know, this guy, like ASAP Ferg, honestly, like, he's a really nice guy. We got to go.
He's a lively guy. ASAP Ferg's a lovely guy.
It was really funny. He came in, did an event. We got to go. He did a recording thing after. We got to go there.
Yeah, cool.
And in the studio when he was doing one of his songs with his DJ, and I think it was What's Her Not. They were doing a collab together. Mm. And I think it was a couple of months later, like, I just turned up to Surrey and he was there, like, in the middle of the day.
Nice.
And I'm just like, oh, hey. He's like, man, yeah, we're just stopping over. I just wanted the fried chicken. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, I love it. It's really good. And we started chatting. He's like, man, you got to do this in the States. I was like, I'm fucking scared to take fried chicken to the States. Like,
yeah.
He's like, dude, man, this new place opened in LA. It's got lines. I've had it. He's like, your chicken is amazing. I want this over there. And we've had like a lot of the artists be like,
amazing,
you need this over there.
That's pretty cool.
You know, Post Malone, everything. Like, each year he's come in and
I want to get some more. Yeah, get some more stories. I want to hear more about these stories of artists and stuff. What's Post Malone like?
Mate, he's
wild.
Nicest guys you'll ever meet. No, honestly, we've had really great relationships with everyone. Mm. We've had a few, you know, won't say that they actually have a bit of anxiety and can't eat in front of people and would go in their car and eat and then come back and didn't want anyone in like their space, you know.
Yeah,
like, but he, honestly, he's fucking hilarious. He's so funny. Like, when we first met him, he first came in, Jess and our promoters of FOMO had brought him in. And it, no tats, no nothing.
Mm.
Just really like, oh, thank you so much. This was really great. I love this. All the boys got like a photo with him in the kitchen. And I was like, oh, shit. And then he went like double platinum. Then he started getting tats the next year. He was like,
By this point or something. Like,
he went, they were in Brisbane and he's like, hey, can we go to Butter? And they're like, it's in Sydney. He's like, well, I don't know. They said if it's true or not. Oh, they wanted him to fly some chicken up or something, right? He's like, nah, when we go to Sydney, we'll do it. He's like, I love this place. He was like upstairs in our garage and like on a milk crate, like cigarette, beer. And he's like with his bouncers there and that. And he's like, man, yeah, I just really fucking love your chicken, eh? Like, he goes, mate, this is fucking cool. I'm telling you, like, you got to do it. What do you want? You want to come over? Yep, you want money? Yep, I got money doing this. You know, like, he wanted to do it. We had a few chats. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But,
sweet.
He came last time with Tyler Wahi, and Tyler had just done his RSA. No, he didn't really. But yeah, it was literally, it was like, hey, I want to, like, all these people are here for me. I want to go behind the bar, and he's making cocktails and, like, yeah, don't show any of the videos licensing. Yeah. But
there's rules in Australia.
You know, like I said, Raekwon, and he's like telling me about his mum's fried chicken recipe. And, you know, we've had like Cormega, like old school hip hop.
Yeah, that's old
he
school.
Was just like, and he just wanted to hang out. He messages every time, like, he's here or even on the Instagram. You go, hey, you guys going? You know, like.
That's so cool.
We haven't had, like, nothing, you know, too crazy, but, just them being them, just taking bottles of champagne out on the road. Yeah. Oh, sorry, man, you can't drink on the street in Australia.
Yeah.
But honestly, it just always had a mad time. They engage with, like, people, you know, customers or people that we invite to these parties. And, man, they've always been really, like, thankful and, you know, they've honestly been really nice. We haven't had anyone, haven't had anything weird. Hard to say. Even when we do the festivals or we take stuff backstage, like Manoli and Mo, like, they got to go the last one with Wu-Tang. Like, they came in store and they got to take him fried chicken backstage. Yeah, cool. And, you know, they're all just loving it. So it's been really good, honestly. And just the words sort of got out from them. And then
How cool is that? It's that, like, they're just telling their mates over in the States and stuff like that. It's like, if you ever go to Sydney, you've got to go to Butter.
Just great just being embraced by that culture that you are sort of being a part of with the shop that you've kind of based a business model on hip hop, and then for, you know, people in, you know, hip hop artists to accept that and to love it.
Yeah.
That just must be real cool.
Look, there's a lot of places that try to get these people in, but, you know, obviously they just sort of come to us or they talk to their record label, and it's always last minute, like 4 PM. Hey, I want to have a party tonight. And like Sony or something will ring. Oh, yeah. Hey, can we do this? We're like, are you fucking serious? Like, they just get it all done.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. And, like, man, we've given them some t-shirts. They wore them on stage. You know, they have, they really, I feel really respected. And, like I said, a few of them have really wanted to and talked to us. And I think, like, the States is such a market. They're like, how has no one done this in the States?
Yeah.
So maybe we should hurry up because who knows? But, I mean, no one's going to the States for 3 years or 4 years now.
Yeah, it's going to be a while.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on slightly. Like, tell us a bit about opening up Parramatta and Chatswood, and sort of, is that just sort of the natural progression of a successful business? Like, I mean, you know, that's kind of the dream for a lot of owners and a lot of chefs. It's like, you know, multiple venues, you can manage it and start being properly successful in this industry.
Maybe it's still not.
Still, yeah. Still
how do you justify what success is? You know, it's not always monetary or things. I think what we had was we are a culture. We wanted to, what we feel, Sydney, Surry Hills is the one part. That's one customer base. Parramatta, Western Sydney, the next customer base to, like, envision and take our culture. And now opening Chatswood, it's kind of like what we feel, the three boroughs of Sydney, right? We wanted to just get out. Like, if you want to be known or branded or anything, we pick that already. Like, we wanted to. Having Surry Hills, like, going so well, a tiny little place. We did a bigger place in Parramatta. We had a mezzanine. We had all our retail staff. So that was going really well. Driving from Surry to Parra is a pain in the ass, and then now driving to Chatswood. But yeah, it is definitely the progression. We've done it all off our own backs. We haven't had much money to do things.
Yeah.
There's stuff that we've learned and done along the way. I think, you know, owning the businesses and doing stuff, and Manoz always says, you know, the best thing is every decision you make matters.
Yeah.
But the worst fucking thing is every decision you make matters, right? You know, one day, week to week, next to next, oh, this store's doing good, this store's not, oh, but then that store's doing good, this is not, what's going on? But definitely whether we do more, I'd like to go into state, or I do really feel overseas would be great for it, but with everything that sort of happened the last year, like, you know, it's been a very big reset, you know, I'm not talking about COVID, but it actually gave us some time to strip back everything we've sort of done, how we do it, replay our visions, replay our focus, what we're doing, how we're doing it. So, yeah, we could do more. We could do anything. Cool. Staffing's, you know, an issue too.
Yeah.
Getting some good staff. Yeah.
Plenty of issues. So the Chatswood one, you're in shopping center.
Yeah.
So Is that more like... Were you thinking, okay, well, we want to push retail more? Is that a part of it? Like, how does the... That's one thing I didn't ask, which I meant to, was like, How much of the business is retail, and like how much of the business is hospitality?
It's, look, it's still primarily food. We don't want to be that fast fashion and just pumping clothes. Like, we do very select. All our stuff is very limited. We might make, you know, 50 of each t-shirt for us. We'll only get like 10, 20 of like the other brands that we do. The kicks are consignment, so it's other people's on selling. They sell quite a lot of those. Our retail stuff generally sells out. It's not, I mean, I can't actually tell you a figure off the top of my head what percentage is, but being in the shopping center has made it a bit more, like we're selling a few more. We have our own inside dining in the, so we're not actually just like a shop front, like a general place that's in a food court. We actually have our own little site inside. So yeah, you know what? Fucking 2020 was so fucked up. We're just kind of like, do we want to go in a center? Let's just fucking try it.
Yeah.
No,
that's good.
I mean, more and more places are like Birdie in cocktail bar in Melbourne is like in a shopping center, and it's like one of the fucking like sickest little bars in Australia right now. And like things are popping up, and the opportunities they give you and the amount of fucking high rises that go up that have all these places. Like, I mean, Wollongong's bad for it. Like, all these high-rises have all got commercial spaces. They're all empty. So they're all like dying out for people to move in. And you're like, well.
And it's kind of all that urban planning. They need to have restaurants, but then there's such an influx of restaurants, and then so many restaurants have closed down in the past year because, you know, it's another story for another time. These developers and restaurants opening and throwing money and then not looking after you, you know, after you're kind of going. But it's hard. You know, hospo's hard, mate. Figures are slim from 1 week to another is so variable. Get it from both sides, staff, suppliers, then you got the customer side of things, and then you got to make sure you're paying everyone and doing it, and you have one bag week can throw you out.
So I mean, you've talked about interstate, you've talked about more butter. Like, do you see any more anything other than butter on the horizon? Any more hot dog tent,
hot dog and camping jazz
equipment. Look, I think through the last year and sort of looking back, there is some stuff we'd like to do and sort of morph into and change. I think there's, you know, it's nothing that's not ever been done before, but doing it differently. I think the possibilities are endless. I've got a list of things I wanted to always do from starting and doing butter. Like, my dad had, like, you know, chicken shops and Big Rooster and wholesale businesses, and we had a florist and all these things. Like, I like my fingers in every pie. Like, I like to be involved, even here, like the retail, Joe and Manoli do it, but I always like to, you know, make sure I'm kind of across everything. There's definitely some stuff I want to do.
Cool.
Yeah. A lot of people open restaurants and they always got to have like a twist. It's always got to be like, we're doing like this and it's modern, this infuses this. Like, what is actually, it seems to be harder because less people do it, is taking concepts and just doing them well.
That
should be twist enough for most places. And there's so much scope to go, like, you know, like, you know, fried chicken's like, how can we do the best fucking fried chicken with, like, you know, good chicken, good ingredients, and make, you know, nail that recipe. You can do that across so many cuisines.
The places with the longest lines in the world are probably those like Michelin star hawkers in Hong Kong and char siu.
It's quite like in Japanese culture where people just do one thing really fucking well.
I love Japanese food and like go one of those little ramen places and that, like, you think about like burger places and what we are fast casual, but we are such in a different weird spot, and it's honestly, it's just so weird. We keep thinking we're not like this, we're not like that, we're like in between, which is fucking hard because we've got that retail, we've got the food, we've got the champagne, we're like a bar but we're like a restaurant and this, but we do takeaway. Coming up with like the ramen or like our noodle dishes, things like that, they are very simple. I mean, the ramen's not, it's a fucking pain in the ass, but normal burger places is like 25 patties on a fucking burger, or you know all these different sauces. Like, man, it's just, our things are like Jesus, cheese, honey, mustard, lettuce, like that's it, you know. And doing that is like harder and keeping it going. But what you're saying, like having a concept, doing something, I feel that, like, we get to play a little bit more than just sort of be just that kind of fast casual. And then we get that concept, we get to play in the retail and we get to play in the drink space, like a bit more than here's the place, this is my vision, but it's fucking hard.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it is harder to really.
How have you found having that bit of creativity and a bit of changing with having multiple venues now, where things have to be, where you can't be at all places at once, yes. And everything does have to be more set. Like we have to be like, right, well, I need to write down how you like fucking walk, right leg, left leg, for everyone to fucking make sure they do it properly.
Yeah, we started bits and pieces of that. We're still far from it, but having the two wasn't too bad. Parramatta was a bigger store. Surrey's like a little store. I always wanted to do sort of, we do have a charcoal chicken out there now. Yeah. And now sort of Parramatta and Chatswood have the bigger menu, and then Surrey's smaller. And then, yeah, just from opening now, I'm like, hey, we're going to do this. And I'm like, fuck, I actually need to write this out properly. Yeah. Okay. And now, okay, actually, I can't just give them like 11 p.m. at night that it's going on the next day. You know, so hopefully it's making me...
Let's try this.
Yeah.
I have to plan this week in advance.
So, which is great. Like it's trying to, or hopefully making me more structured, you know, to do that. And you know what? Look, McDonald's, KFC, hey, I love eating them, but they actually have done great within hospitality, you know, the systems and the structures. Like, you know, we have a few kids that have worked there, and how they've trained and learned there is very great.
Yes, it's pretty impressive. Like, it's to have that many restaurants where it's consistent, and it's always the fucking same. Like, that
McDonald's
is, that
throughout
is
the
is
world.
Wonder.
I would try a McDonald's in every country. I love Macca's. You know, dirty Macca's.
People who act
Uber
like they
eats.
Don't like Macca's, I just think it's just fucking liars. They're just like on their moral high horse, just liars.
Yeah.
It's like, it's inherently delicious. There's so much salt, so much fat, so much sugar. It can't
it's
not
addictive.
Be delicious.
It's so addictive. But yeah, to go around the world, they are so consistent. Yeah. KFC is not consistent throughout the world.
Yeah, actually, KFC in the UK is quite different.
Yeah, Hong Kong was the worst probably KFC I had. But their Macca's fried chicken is excellent in Hong Kong.
But yeah, I mean, it's like those are things that like you don't learn as a chef.
No.
Like that stuff like being able to, you know, make sure everything's written out, have all your recipe cards, have all your procedures in place. Like that's something you have to take from, you know, larger business corporate world.
Yeah. And I think a lot of, you know, they say a lot of cooks aren't great business people, right? I think I was sort of lucky growing up with dad, had a little bit of a sense, and then my business partners thinking differently too. Mm. You know, there's still stuff we do right, stuff we do wrong, but it is hard. And having that structure and being able to do multiples, like I love it. It's, you know, a lot of work, you're spending a lot of hours trying to do it, you're always chasing your tail because you're always fighting fires or something come up. I would love just to stop for like 3-4 weeks,
yeah, and just cook.
Close everything and just catch up. You know, to implement more better, but it's never going to happen. But yeah, I it's the fun of it. It's the fun of doing it and to try to be consistent. And you're looking like, I hate them, but like Google reviews and they say this at this store or that at that store, really just trying to get the same stuff is very difficult because you don't have that same chef in every store or you don't have that same team, and it is hard, but it's why you do it. You love it.
Yeah. Solving those problems.
Cool. I reckon that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Good way to end it. Julian, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Hello, dear listeners. Steph here. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of The Food Fight. If you want to get in touch with us, it's at The Food Fight Podcast on Instagram or thefoodfightpodcast@gmail.com. We want to hear from you and we want to talk to you. Please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. That really helps. If you want to hit me up, it's quicksandfood.com or at quicksandfood on Instagram. And if you want to get in touch with Simon, it's Simon_Evans_TBD on Instagram. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll catch you again with another episode.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.